What do you think are the top skills you need as a product manager? What is a product manager to begin with? As a PM myself, I could theorize a lot about these questions, but instead I thought I'd ask someone who is not me and has a wealth of experience in the field, the CEO of Product School, Carlos Gonzalez de Villaambrosia. Carlos and I dive deep into the product management field, discussing the differences between various PM categories, what it means to become the best PM one can be, and what the outlook is for the next 5 years for those that want to break into the field. Enjoy this episode. Hello, folks. Welcome to another episode of the Work Item Podcast. And today I am talking to Carlos Gonzalez de Villaambrosia. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Carlos. So we start with the number one question that folks probably have is, what do you do nowadays? I know that you're the CEO of Product School, but maybe you can give us some more context as to what that actually means.
So what am I doing here? As you said, I'm the founder and CEO at Product School, but my name is Carlos. I'm originally from Spain. I've been starting companies my whole life, really. This is my third company, depending on how you count it. And I studied computer science, so I know how to build digital things, but I soon enough realized that I didn't want to spend the rest of my life just coding. And that's what inspired me to eventually come to Silicon Valley to chase my dream, which was to work in technology and start my own company. And I did it first. I first came here as a student, went to business school in UC Berkeley, and then eventually decided to start creating different companies. And the current one, Product School, is something that I started 10 years ago as a solution to my own problem, because both in engineering school as well as business school, I didn't really learn anything about product management or how to build products, how to bridge that gap between technology and business, which is what I absolutely love. And I created a school that I wish I had when I was getting started.
It feels like you have the entrepreneurial bug for some time now.
I guess so, even though I don't come from a family of entrepreneurs. My mom is a lawyer, my dad is a doctor, and they always told me, you have to play it safe. You need to work for the government, or you need to find a big company that will pay you a good salary and hopefully they keep you forever.
That sounds like a very non-traditional path, but it looks like the risk paid off, because at the end of the day, that entrepreneurship kind of mindset, I think it helped you where you are today. But before I get into the career conversation, because I have a lot of questions about your own career, maybe we can start with also, for folks listening, outlining what is a product manager, right? Because there is a lot of hype around the role today, right? Like a lot of folks want to become product manager, but what does it actually mean? What does a product manager mean for you?
That is a fantastic question, because I've been answering that for a very long time, and the type of answer actually evolved depending on the level of maturity of the market. And let me explain that. Like 10 years ago, when people came to me and said, what is a product manager? I would have to simplify the answer and try to explain that product can be something digital, first and foremost. It's not just something you can touch. So in our context, that means websites or mobile applications. The next phase to that is to try to explain, but who is actually building this type of software applications? Because the obvious answer goes to maybe coders, right? Like someone has to program that, or maybe designer, someone has to make this look more usable for the user. And maybe someone has to sell it. But nobody is thinking about the product manager. Who is that person and why do we need one of these? Because they're expensive and they don't really code, design, or sell. Well, that product manager, they're spot on. That is that person who is in between, making sure that those software products are actually being built on time and quality. And not only that, because that kind of sounds like a project manager definition, these type of products are making a business impact in the market, meaning they are making money, they are contributing to the company to continue growing. So they have a huge strategic component.
I like that framing, because especially in our industry right now, there is a bit of muddying the waters between PM being kind of the catch-all for project manager, product manager, program manager, and they all have like ever so slightly different responsibilities. And so for folks listening to this, we are specifically focusing on the conversation around product manager, and that is the expert on the problem space, the expert on customers, and this is less, my understanding is about process and more about actually driving insights into what the product materializes in.
Correct. And that's something that with time has been much more understood by a lot of people, because when I started, there weren't really that many companies hiring product managers. This wasn't that much in demand, right? So we had to educate the market in a way. But if you look around today, there's at least one third of the Fortune 100 that already have a chief product officer. The product has a seat at the table. Long gone are the days where the highest ranked product person in the organization reports to a chief marketing officer or a chief technology officer. Product has its own entity. And by the way, these companies in the Fortune 100 are not just high tech. In fact, my minority is high tech. I'm talking about companies that are in oil and gas, consumer packaged goods, consulting, financial services, healthcare. So the concept of building software is applicable to pretty much any company, regardless of any location, because it's not just about the software that people can see in a website or a mobile application. There are hundreds of internal applications that team members are using to collaborate more effectively.
And I think this also gets to the point that product management is one of those roles that can take many shapes and sizes, because we always think of a PM that somebody works on, you know, user-facing features, UX, you know, something that you can kind of put in front of users and say, this is what they actually helped craft. But that's not usually the case. And especially, you know, you called out things like internal tools. Oftentimes there is work to be done on developer tools, which are not any less valuable and still need product managers.
Correct. So we've been riding that wave for the last 10 years. Now there are thousands of companies actively hiring product managers. You mentioned some of them are focused on external applications. Some of them are focused on internal applications. But the point is, this is a role that is key for any company, and the demand is still growing.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I'm actually excited to talk to you more about this as kind of the expert in the product space. And with it, maybe you can tell us more about, you know, what inspired you to start Product School? Because you called out earlier that obviously it's one of the things that you wish you had when you were kind of getting up in the industry. But also, like, how did the vision that you had initially for Product School evolve and change since you first bootstrapped it?
I like that you use the word evolve and change, because I wish I could say, you know what, I had this crazy vision since the very beginning and I'm executing on that vision. That's not true. The vision has been evolving, and it started really as a solution to my own problem. As I mentioned before, as a former software engineer, I didn't really learn how to market the things that I was creating. And then when I went to business school, they also didn't really teach me much about how to market those things. It was pretty high level. So I always found myself in between, creating something that I didn't even know how to call. And I started a couple of companies, and as a founder, you wear that hat of the product manager, especially at the very beginning. There is no product manager. You are that person. And so I didn't realize that, oh my God, there's this thing called product management I've been doing unofficially my whole life. And now it has a label, there's a discipline around it, but still the traditional education system is not really teaching it. So I decided to go for it and create the school of my dreams. And there were a few other tweaks that I wanted to make to that school of my dreams, other than just picking that topic that I care about. One is, who is teaching it? So I always want to learn from the best. And in my traditional career as a student, I didn't always love my teachers, right? Some of them were good educators, but they didn't have practical experience. So at product school, I wanted the instructors to be practitioners, real world product leaders who are actively working at best product companies in the world, such as Google, Meta, Airbnb, Netflix, Uber. They are the ones who know that we've been building stuff, so they are in the best possible position to teach that next generation. Those are our instructors. The two other things that I wanted to tweak, one was the duration. I never understood why we are supposed to study full-time until our mid-20s, and then at some point, then we're supposed to find a job and be full-time professionals for the rest of our life. But what about lifelong learning and investing in learning the same way we invest in our bodies or in our spirit. Like, there should be a place for people to continue learning. And that's what we do. All of our trainings are on weeknights or weekends, so people can keep up with their life and continue investing in themselves. And last but not least, I think the online access is very important. For us, all of the trainings are delivered live online, so people can access those best instructors regardless of wherever they are located.
I love that format, and especially I think what resonated with me is the fact that good PM resources are incredibly scarce nowadays. Because one thing that kind of stood out to me about the work that you're doing with Product School, and full disclaimer, when I mentor folks, oftentimes I refer them to your YouTube channel and say like, hey, go look at Product School because there's some awesome advice there. There's a heavy focus on practical experience. So you're talking to actual practitioners of the craft. It's very easy in the product space to get into the mode of, I want to call them like platitudes, right? It's like, well, always focus on the product vision, like define the North Star, build a roadmap. And it's like, it's all great. But once the rubber meets the road, that's when the actual challenges start. And navigating those is very, very hard. And so I think there's a tremendous value in bringing that kind of practical aspect to it. In terms of bootstrapping the company, in terms of kind of starting from the ground up, what do you see as, or what did you see at the time as the biggest challenges in starting a PM focused company? Because it's not necessarily a your typical tangible product, right? Like, there's not a hey, there's a software that helps solve problems. It's more like, this is an educational resource. Like, walk me through that.
Correct. Now, I was very intentional about creating something that didn't scale and be the product that I would eventually have to productize. But at the very, very beginning, I was the first instructor, I was the admissions officer, I was the customer support representative. I would do it all for literally for the first 2 years. And that gave me a really good sense of what type of quality I want to provide and what is really necessary in order to continue growing the business without sacrificing the student experience. And that comes from a hard lesson learned. In my previous company, I raised a lot of money, probably too early, from a lot of other people. So I found myself optimizing for the people who gave me the money and not always optimizing for the customers. So I'm not saying VC is evil, and there's definitely a model that works definitely for them and as well as for companies that do need capital in order to get started. But not all of the companies need capital in order to get started. And at least I realized that my definition of happiness now living in Silicon Valley maybe wasn't the same definition of happiness of other founders. And to me, it's not about my company valuation or who I'm raising money from or how big my team is. To me, I wanted to build something that I care about. Hopefully has customers that do love what I'm building and they can, and I can pay the bills. And that was literally the V1 of Product School. Obviously, after 10 years, we scaled that to over 2 million members and hundreds of thousands of product managers who are today in senior positions now hiring that future generation. But it started from a very, very intentional realization of like, who am I really optimizing for? And let me be the product first. Let me really ensure quality. And then when the time is right, then we can see how we can get additional capital to scale our vision.
That makes a lot of sense. And especially for newer companies, kind of focus on the, I want to say like the craft is critical. In, you know, Product School has been out there for a while. Like, and, you know, it has a lot of folks that I hear talking about Product School. What are some of your favorite success stories that you recall from your company?
Well, I'm thinking one comes to mind, especially during the pandemic. There was this student who was a chef and had to reinvent himself because at that time people couldn't go to restaurants. And he decided to become a product manager and went through our training and eventually got a product manager job for a food tech company that appreciated his background in food as well as his new skills in product. And that changed his life. And I should give him all the credit in the world for like being hungry and having the tenacity to really reinvent himself. But when I hear those stories, those are really some of the things that get me going. We have a ritual in the company. Every single week, we have success stories to share with everybody. And many of them actually come from social media. We just type our company name and see what people are saying. Others come from emails, students email to our support team. Others come from instructors. But like the point is sharing them with the team, putting a face and explaining why we do what we do. Because it's really important to reinforce those messages. We are building something for real humans that are investing time and money with us because they want to grow their careers.
And so the framing here is that it's all about the customer growth, right? Which is very uncommon in a lot of companies because you're focusing on what outcome are we driving for those that actually use our product, that use our resources versus just us as a company.
I would say the outcome is student satisfaction. Of course, growth is a byproduct of that, but it goes one student at a time. And we know their names and we know where they work and they know about us. And obviously at this point, not everybody knows about me or vice versa, but they do build a relationship with that instructor. And that relationship goes way beyond graduation. Like our cohorts are for around 20 students. So just imagine like just 20 students at a time with one instructor spending almost 2 months on weeknights or weekends. They really get to know each other. And those are the connections that will eventually pay off, in addition to obviously the value of the certification and the job that you may get at the end of the day. When you look back, you know, 15 years from now, there are some moments in your life and some humans, hopefully, that you met with us that are going to have a very, very positive impact.
There are a lot of product manager communities out there and a lot of resources, lots of blogs and all sorts of articles. How do you see product school being kind of a differentiator here? Because oftentimes, and again, my conversations with product managers, one of the challenges they encounter is that it's very hard to find credible, reliable resources that kind of cover the end-to-end of the role. And because it's all just so scattered, it's just sea of material, right? And arguably for a lot of things like, you know, engineering, you can Google for a problem, you can search how to fix some specific, you know, error and whatnot. For product management, that becomes a little trickier because like every problem is very much individualized. So how do you see product school kind of stepping in here and being a different kind of resource?
Look, when I started the company, there wasn't really any community. We really decided to go for it and build that first and then best community, because there were still resources out there, but they weren't really that as reliable. You need to Google certain things, go to certain discussion forums and hope for the best. So the intentional decision that I made was that we were going to build a community, not just a company. So today we are over 2 million members. We are the largest community, and it's not just about being the largest for the sake of it. For me, building a community is really creating a space where others can benefit from it. It's not just for the company to suddenly sell more training. Sure, there's obviously a benefit for the company to build a community, but we are not the only beneficiaries. The same way we are not the only contributors to it. There's a lot of value between peers who join the community. There are many other vendors who join. The point is trying to create an agnostic place where people can come and learn. And if you look at our resources today, like over 90% of the things that we do are free and available right now. Like we organize around 300 events per year. We host 3 conferences in person in New York, San Francisco, and London. We have job board. We put together reports. The idea with this is to add value up front and make sure that the whole industry can get elevated. Because I believe that if we do that, we will all win. So to me, it's not so much about how are you different from one community or another startup, or to me, it's more about how are you different than the status quo? And the status quo was like people were lost. And now they hopefully have a reliable source where they can learn.
As you said, the rising tide lifts all ships, right? And it's a very, again, unusual perspective in that giving out a lot of resources and materials for free is not something that you would kind of expect from an educational company. Because for a lot of courses, a lot of any kind of material that helps you grow in your career, especially, you see a lot of these kind of pitches coming in. It's like, oh, pay for my ebook and like get all these secrets. And you're kind of going in the opposite way. You're saying like, hey, here's all the stuff that folks in the industry are doing. Like I referenced earlier, the YouTube channel is a fantastic starting point for product school. And it's available to anyone worldwide. Like you don't need to pay for it.
There are people that will never ever pay for anything. And that's okay, because I'm focused on really building long-term relationships with people who join our community. I want people who meet us today to eventually become chief product officers at incredible companies and reference some of their resources or the people that they met along the way. So sure, the content is important, but I see content more as a commodity. I think that the real value add is the relationships with the people and the experience that you are going to have.
Content is a commodity. That's an important gold nugget here. In terms of teaching folks to be good product managers, one of the more challenging aspects that I found, for example, in my career is instilling such a thing as, you know, known in our circles as the product mindset, kind of thinking through the product a little bit more deeply than just from an engineering standpoint. It's a very squishy problem. It's one of those things that's very hard to teach. How do you approach that at a product school? How do you approach that yourself when you need to kind of instill this product sense, if you will?
I remember when I started, a lot of people questioning that you cannot teach product management because you need to be born with certain skills. You need to be a visionary. And if you're not a visionary, sorry, you need to do something else, right? Well, it turns out that's not true at all. You can definitely learn product management the same way you can learn software engineering, data analytics, UX design, or whatever you want to learn. And so we decided to create that place where people can learn. Now, here's the thing. There wasn't really a formal education in this. So the real learnings was in the head of a lot of product leaders working at top companies that created their own playbooks. But those weren't easily accessible unless you had the opportunity to work at those places. So we created that platform where we would invite all of these product leaders to share those playbooks and for us to curate that information to understand patterns between companies, as well as things that are different. Because at the end of the day, even if you have the perfect playbook, you still need to create your own version for your own company. So there's a lot of hard skills that can be learned, such as creating the right roadmaps, prototyping, running an A/B test, analyzing data, and so forth. And that's what we are showing. The same way, it really doesn't matter what's your professional background if you want to learn how to become a product manager. There's another common misconception around, well, you need to be a software engineer. You need to know how to code. Otherwise, you cannot be a product manager, right? Or you need to have an MBA. Turns out, that is not true at all. Of course, if you have a technical background, if you have an MBA, that's all great, but that's not necessary. So I think demystifying all of that, breaking down the hard skills that product managers use in a way that people can acquire and show them also the tools that product managers use on a daily basis so they can also use that for real, it's very important. Now, the word product mindset, you know, is subjective. We try to break that down into the scientific part of building products. And then, of course, there are certain soft skills and other things with experience that you will also need to acquire along the way.
I'm curious from your perspective, and you've alluded to it in terms of different companies can have different playbooks in terms of product management kind of approach to how they set up the career track, how they develop the skills. What do you see kind of the challenges in between training product managers or PMs for short for startups versus the more rigid large corporate entities? And they don't need to be in tech, by the way. Like as you called out very early in the show, that product managers can be everywhere. It's not about just tech companies, but it still feels like there would be a difference between somebody working at a startup versus somebody working at a bigger, more established company.
Totally. And we train both. When we started the company, we were focused on individuals and anyone basically would join those cohorts from different companies. And now we do that and a lot of private training for large organizations, such as Microsoft, JP Morgan, Walmart, consulting firms. And we've seen that, first of all, each company will have their own operating model And it's not about throwing everything away and now suddenly reinventing the wheel. It's about working with the elements and, of course, finding opportunities to change behavior when it makes sense, when it contributes to the business outcomes. So if you try to do that in a smaller organization, that tends to be easier because there is nothing. So it's really more about the founder culture and like how things get started. If you join early on, you will have a lot of opportunity to shape that culture, to shape that vision. While if you join as the product manager number 5,321 at MasterCard, then you have very little opportunity to realistically shape vision or culture there. So I think it's important to put those things in perspective. There's another thing that I also share with our students, which is you want to be in a place where there is an appreciation for product and that there has to be some top-down support. If you work in a company where the CEO really doesn't care about product, then it's going to be almost impossible for that team to suddenly start getting more exposure and really start making an impact. However, you work at a company where the CEO comes from a product background or there's clear appreciation for product, then product is going to have more opportunities. So, now, all of this said, let's say you join an organization that is what I would call pre-product market fit, say early stage startup, 20, 30 people, maybe you are the first or the second product manager. Well, at that point, playbooks don't really matter much because it's all about finding product market fit as fast as possible. Because if you don't find product market fit, that company will go under. Now, let's say you join an organization that is already post product market fit, where there's something that is working. There's someone paying for something. So you join and the role technically there is more about optimizing certain things that work, as well as trying to find new opportunities, but mostly optimizing certain things that work. And there are PMs that can be amazing in that 0-1 phase and finding net new opportunities. The same way there are others who are probably much better at optimizing something that already works and taking it from 1 to 10 or maybe 10 to 100 or 100 to 1,000.
I like the spectrum of variability in it, in that there is a lot of nuance to making product manager decisions. And that is something that a lot of PMs oftentimes make the mistake that it's like, there's a broad brush, everyone's a PM, here's this framework that, let's say, some bank X established, we all should be using this framework, that's the solution. And that's not always the case, it sounds like. There's a lot of what ifs and adaptability to the situation they're in.
I wish it was that easy, right? Everybody would run around with their playbook and suddenly things would work.
In terms of skills, and specifically kind of the, I want to call them, maybe like a good term is like interdisciplinary skills. You called out the example of the chef earlier. And I'm curious, where do you see the value of product managers being not only product experts, but also combining with some other kind of, you know, set of abilities that might create superpowers for them in their career? Like, where do you see that?
Well, the companies that are already have a chief product officer, companies that are elevating the role of product, are thinking of product as business, not just as IT or as a cost center. They are thinking of product as a revenue generator. And because nobody would say, well, we're just going to hire a chief product officer because it's cool. No, they're going to do it because it's good business. And why is it good business? Well, because product leaders or the product function is now owning part of the revenue, or it's definitely contributing hand in hand with go-to-market functions to generate that revenue, because now there's opportunity to have more reach through online channels, because now there are opportunities to create net new digital services or products on top of anything physical that you sell. So now the product team is now in charge to not just make the user happy, but in charge of making the company money. And hopefully you can bridge the gap between those two, and that's where the magic happens.
And the magic happens when things fall into place based on a lot of incremental investment that you're describing. Like a lot of these relationships, a lot of these skills, it takes time to put them together.
Products never end, right? Like you're always going to be evolving, and that's the role of that product leader to find those opportunities and decide what's next, because all of these responsibilities come with a pretty high risk, What if you prioritize something that hasn't actually moved the needle?
Which happens a lot. If you're a product manager, you see it a lot in like any team. Like things will not always be successful.
Exactly. And that's in a way, okay, and let me explain that. Like I think of a product as a product roadmap as a diversified portfolio of bets, where you know that not all of them are going to work, but you are placing bets in different places, assuming that the net result is going to be much, much more positive than what you have today. Some of those bets are related to short-term wins. You still want to have some bets related to long-term. These days, given the macro situation, we're seeing product teams spending most of their energy and their bets on short to mid-term, because it makes sense. Otherwise, there might not be space to test those long-term bets, but there still has to be space for long-term. And I think creating type of culture of experimentation is what encourages people to experiment more and not just be tied to one shot at a time.
No, this is a fantastic perspective to keep in mind, especially, as you said, the current conditions kind of steer a lot of teams to do short-term bets, and that's okay too. In terms of skills, and specifically product-focused skills, given the fact that you know you've worked with, I'm sure, hundreds if not thousands of students probably, what do you see as some skills that are underestimated, some skills that maybe folks are not fully realizing how valuable they are when they jump into the world of PM?
So I always define product management as a generalist role where you are hopefully good enough at many things, but don't have enough time to be the best at anything, really. So most of product managers, if not all, they come from sort of a specialist background. Like there are no pure breed PMs. Very few people get a product manager job right after school. They spend some time as engineers, designers, marketers, consultants, you name it, and then at some point they switch into product. So it's normal that you will be stronger on one of those dimensions, but getting better at that dimension is not going to make you a better generalist or a better product manager. At some point you need to start investing more time into these other dimensions in order to be good enough at them. I've never met a product manager that is excellent at both design and engineering and then marketing. Like they probably have a specialty and then they supplement those gaps with just experience and training. So that's how I think about this role of the product manager. Obviously, that's a pretty high level definition because there has to be the same way before we talked about product market fit. Before that product market fit, there has to be a product manager product fit. And that's what that's what I see a lot of PMs not spending enough time. Product management is so hot these days. The salaries are so high. There are so many companies hiring that I see a lot of people just rushing to get a PM job because it seems like it's great. It's not that great. You have to work very hard. There's a reason why those companies are going to pay or want to pay you a lot of money. And by the way, there's a lot of competition. It's not that easy. So I think it's important, and this is what we spend time with our students on, understanding what do you bring to the table and what are some of the companies that might be a good fit for you. You might be a great PM in some companies and might be a terrible PM in others. So to your point before around startup versus mid-size versus large-size company is just one dimension. We can look at industries, we can look at location, we can do at different variables, but I think spending time on identifying who are you, what type of value do you bring to the table, and what will be the right fit is ultimately going to help you long term.
So in addition to this fit, what do you see as areas where PMs, whether aspiring PMs or veteran PMs who've been doing it for a while, can make investments right now to become a better product manager in the future?
Investing in training, whatever format you want to pick. But the fact that you got a PM job and you were successful at a company doesn't guarantee that you will be successful at the next company or successful at the next level of responsibility. And there is no secret bullet. You need to keep putting in the work. Same way if you go to the gym, maybe you are in shape today, but if you stop working out and you start eating unhealthy, at some point you're going to get out of shape. So I think it's very important for not just PMs, but in general, professionals that want to compete at the highest level to continue investing in themselves, right? And that can be coaching, that can be training, That can be peer mentoring, whatever that might be. You pick your poison. But what's non-negotiable is investing in yourself and blocking time for it. Otherwise, there will always be another short-term fire that would deprioritize your investment.
And there's always short-term fires in the PM job. And not to get a little speculative, if we look at a five-year horizon, let's keep it at five. I don't want to, you know, given how fast things are moving right now, I would be very hesitant to go beyond five. But let's say 5 years, where do you see the product manager career track going in the next 5 years?
It's going to keep growing very, very fast. What I've seen in the last 10 years is an exponential growth in demand. Now it's no secret anymore that any company in any location, regardless of what they're selling, are hiring product. We're seeing many companies now having chief product officers. So there's definitely room to close that gap between the one-third-ish companies in the Fortune 100 to hopefully that 100%. So in the next 5 years, I would expect that all of the companies in the Fortune 100 will have a product executive at the table. I also expect many of those companies will have CEOs that come from product backgrounds. So the CPO is your natural next CEO. We're seeing that in companies such as YouTube, for example. The CPO became the CEO, and that's a tremendous validation from the top. I also totally see more companies, regardless of their industry, leveraging digital in general to tap into net new products and services. And that's why I believe that digital professionals, especially product managers, are going to have much more demand.
These are some excellent insights. And I want to wrap up our show on asking one question I ask of all my guests. And that is, if you think of one piece of unconventional advice that you would give somebody that wants to grow as a product professional, what would that be?
Unconventional advice. Well, I can share something that worked for me or didn't work. I mean, that's like unconventional. I think I broke into product randomly. Like I at some point realized that what I was doing was called product management by some people. And it took me a long time building until I kind of learned certain things that served me. I think there are places today where you can accelerate your learning. And by the way, a lot of that is free. But the unconventional part is that there is still no replacement for putting in the work. There is no magic book, magic course, magic coach, magic anything that is suddenly going to give you your dream job or make you successful at what you consider that dream job. And if you look at that top 10% product leaders, they are putting in the work. They might look great on paper and they'll be giving all of these big talks at events, and that's part of the job. But when they close the door, they are grinding.
A lot of hard work. Fantastic advice. Carlos, where can folks learn more about the work you're doing, about product school? Where should they go?
Well, I'm very active on LinkedIn. So anyone that wants to connect with me there, I do my best to always get back to them. And also, if anyone wants to join our community for free, they can just go to our website, productschool.com.
Excellent. Carlos, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.